I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
Three young brothers taken far too soon. Tonight, we're learning more about Alex, Riley, and Cohen Bagan Overholt, killed in a Brampton townhouse fire.
In the bitter cold, a memorial for the young victims continues to grow, a community struggling to cope with this tragic loss. Good evening. Tonight, we are hearing from the family of those three boys.
Described as a tribe of their own, they're being remembered as incredibly kind, always caring, and deeply loved. CTV's Mike Walker is live at the scene of the fire near Torbram Road and Clark Boulevard with more. Mike.
Well, Nathan, Michelle, the grieving family issuing a statement this afternoon thanking first responders for their efforts in trying to rescue the three brothers from their burning townhome yesterday, and also thanking the community for their support during this very difficult and unimaginable time. A growing memorial just steps away from an unimaginable loss. Three young brothers died after fire ripped through their Brampton home yesterday. Family identifying the boys as 9-year-old Alex, 12-year-old Riley, and 15-year-old Cohen Bagan Overholt. Their grieving family issuing a statement that reads in part, "First responders made valiant efforts to rescue them, and we thank them for their bravery and attempts. Heather's boys were a delightful, rambunctious bunch, but they were also a tribe of their own. Brothers and young boys that can most definitely be described as incredibly kind, always caring, affectionate, and more than anything, deeply loved."
It's rough, devastating, right? The kids will be missed.
All day, neighbors, classmates, and their parents have been leaving flowers, pausing to remember the brothers.
They're good, really good friends of mine. I wanted to show some support.
We really feel bad for what's happened, and the mom, I can't imagine what she's going through right now.
The fire quickly spread through the townhome just after 9 Thursday morning. Firefighters were able to rescue the boys, but they died from their injuries in hospital. The family says the boy's mother was dropping off her youngest child at daycare when the fire broke out.
The flames were actually coming out on top of the garage, and thick smoke was coming from the kitchen side.
Bernard Rodriguez lives next door and is still reeling.
I'm shaken at this time, even though imagining what the other family went through.
Investigators with the fire marshal's office sifting through the charred and gutted house today, looking for any evidence of a cause. Brampton's fire chief returning to the devastating scene, placing three Dalmatian stuffed animals at the memorial.
We just wanted to show some recognition of what happened here today, and just a quiet moment to remember and honor those that passed away.
Cohen is being remembered for his sense of humor, Riley for being smart and observant, and Alex is a happy-go-lucky boy with an infectious smile.
They were always smiling, and she loved those children.
Kamar Cameron is friends with the boy's mother, Heather, and has helped create a GoFundMe account to help cover the funeral costs and the family rebuild their lives.
There's nothing that can change what has happened, but at least we can try and provide something better, safer. Just for the last boy that she has there left.
The family thanking the community for the support, donations, and empathy during this unimaginable time. The family says the brothers are also survived by their big sister Taylor and 5-year-old baby brother Nate. The investigators with the fire marshal's office still remain on scene at this hour. At this point, there is no word yet on a possible cause or origin of the fire. Investigators are expected to remain here for several days. Reporting live in Brampton, I'm Mike Walker. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Mike. We turn now to the murder of a Toronto teen. 15-year-old Jordan Carter was gunned down in an East York parking garage. His accused killer, another youth, a 13-year-old boy.
CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live at the shooting scene on Gamble Avenue near Pape and O'Connor tonight. Scott, this crime reigniting concerns about gun violence and youth in our city.
Absolutely, Michelle. As you mentioned, this is a crime that involves a 15-year-old victim and a 13-year-old accused. The 15-year-old in this case, an avid skateboarder known across the city at skate parks everywhere.
This underground parking garage on Gamble Avenue is where Jordan Carter died. he was a nice kid, you know, like, he's always happy, always telling people good things, always just making everybody feel good, you know?
But those who knew the 15-year-old say this is where he lived, on his skateboard. The teen's social media accounts plastered with videos of him and his friends skateboarding around the city. Some believe it might be why the Etobicoke resident was in this East York parking garage on Wednesday night.
Everybody went there, yeah. The parking garage she was at. This is a popular place, you know?
Police were called here around 11:30 for reports of a shooting.
Officers located a 15-year-old boy who was suffering from a life-threatening gunshot wound. He was pronounced deceased at the scene.
At Lakeshore Collegiate Institute today, students were dealing with the news.
It's just terrible, you know? It's just a terrible thing. I don't know what to make of it.
Just 21 days into January, this is Toronto's eighth homicide of the year. Police have now charged a 13-year-old boy with second-degree murder.
We have seized two handguns and ammunition in relation to this investigation. We are alleging that the 13-year-old is responsible for the shooting-related death of Jordan Carter.
Residents who live on this street are shaken.
A lot of people are scared. A lot of people are considering moving because of the incident.
Some say they've asked building management to deal with access to and trespassing in the underground garage area.
For about the last month and a half, these kids have been going down in there and partying. Like, it's not like it's just once in a while. They're down there all the time.
Police won't say why they believe the victim or the accused were believed to be in the parking garage or what, if any, connection they believe existed between the boys before the shooting.
Both families in this case are understandably devastated. We are supporting them in the best way that we can.
Any loss of life is traumatic, not just for the victim's loved ones, but for our communities as well. In this case, the involvement of two teen boys is almost unimaginable. And as a community, we should be devastated.
The Youth Criminal Justice Act prevents us from telling you anything about the accused, but I can tell you that he had his first court appearance this afternoon. That court appearance was made over the phone, and I can tell you that he sounded like a boy. He's a boy facing a very serious charge. He will have his next court appearance on Monday. Reporting live on Gambel Live, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Scott. Gunfire in Durham region this afternoon took the life of one man. Homicide investigators have identified two separate scenes in Oshawa, both are residential areas. One at King and Central Park Boulevard, the other just a two-minute walk south of there. You can see a taxi and a larger perimeter surrounded by police tape.
Also tonight, the effort to haul snow from Toronto neighborhoods to designated dumping sites, making room for vehicles and pedestrians. A progress report on the cleanup operation following Monday's massive storm. But for now, we turn to the latest on the roadmap to reopening in Ontario.
The province has laid out its plan to start lifting COVID-19 restrictions, but tonight there's an ongoing debate over that go-slow approach and where that will leave businesses. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello joins us live with that story. Colin.
Well, just 10 days to go, Nathan, until the first step of that economic reopening. And tonight, the business community tells me they are moving ahead with some trepidation because no one wants to get tripped up in case the government has to extend some of these measures.
While shuttered businesses across Ontario are welcoming the reopening in 10 days, they are also worried about a potential setback.
Really cautious about what they do and how much stuff they order and keep on hand, because no one wants to get into another situation where they're caught with a lot of stock.
Premier Doug Ford outlined a reopening plan in three phases, beginning January 31st, that'll see capacity limits slowly phased out over the next 3 months. The go-slow approach, health experts say, makes sense given where we are in the pandemic.
A leveling off and a plateauing of hospital admissions, a leveling off and plateauing of ICU admissions.
But the government has warned that the peak of ICU and hospital admissions will only come in mid-February. The situation is so precarious that the government will not say when operating rooms can once again reopen, as hospitals deal with record levels of patients and staffing shortages as well.
People who work in the operating rooms have been redeployed to other areas of the hospitals because of issues around staffing and staff shortages.
And so businesses have been warned the reopening could be paused if the situation worsens.
It is really hard to be confident both as a business owner and as a customer when you hear, hey, things are going to be open, but we won't hesitate. And for business owners in particular, Not knowing what those thresholds are that will trigger those decisions makes it really tough.
In the meantime, businesses have been losing money and will continue to lose cash with capacity limits. The Ford government will begin sending out $10,000 grants in February to affected businesses. But after the original Ontario program was subject to fraud, businesses will now be sent a questionnaire to verify that they are eligible.
That they have received losses and that they are still in business.
The information, the government says, will be checked against their own records before a business can receive the funds.
And Restaurants Canada says while it is welcoming the $10,000 being offered by the Ford government, which should be landing at bank accounts sometime in February, they say for most businesses it could only cover expenses and won't nearly be able to cover the losses incurred during the last few weeks and with the 50% capacity limits still to come. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Nathan and Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Colin. Taking a look at some of the newest virus data from across Ontario, Public Health Ontario reporting at least 4,114 people in hospital testing positive for COVID-19. That is an increase of 53 from yesterday. The number of people in intensive care is now 590, down 4 from yesterday. Meanwhile, 7,165 more PCR tests have come back positive, but this is an underestimate of the true number of cases because of stricter eligibility criteria and a lack of testing resources. And more than 22,000 PCR tests remain under investigation.
54% of those hospitalizations are primarily due to COVID-19. The remaining 46% were admitted for other reasons, but are now testing positive for the virus. In intensive care, 82% of patients are admitted primarily for COVID-19. 18% have tested positive, but are being treated for another issue.
Nearly 11,500 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to more than 898,000 over the course of the pandemic. 64 additional deaths are linked to the virus, two of which occurred more than a month ago. 10,865 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Building a condo with families top of mind, the addition to lure parents and teach kids. That's still ahead. The sun has set on another bitterly cold day in Toronto.
So cold, an extreme cold weather alert issued by the city remains in effect. Michelle Jobin is here with a look at the current conditions. It's just too cold to be outside for long periods of time.
Well, yes, and of course, Michelle, the danger when we get wind chills in the minus 20, minus 30 and above range is that frostbite can happen in minutes. So you're right. You really want to make sure you bundle up or just stay inside. What we're looking at right now with the wind chill throughout the region is temperatures getting already close to that minus 20 mark, especially as we get east and north of the city of Toronto. The warmest we got today was minus 10, feeling like minus 12. Right now, we're sitting at minus 11 at Pearson and downtown. Overnight tonight, minus 14, feeling like minus 20. So when we're near that minus 15 mark, we get that extreme cold warning issued. Winds are relatively calm, and that's good. We do have a little bit of lake effect to talk about in the GTA. I'll show you more about that coming up. It could affect things on the road as we get into the next little while. Michelle?
Thanks, Michelle. Meantime, there are mountains of snow growing tonight as the city works to clear city streets after Monday's massive blizzard.
Dump trucks carrying away loads, slowly easing the strain on Toronto's clogged neighborhoods. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live at one of those snow dump sites in the Portlands. And Beth, we got a snow removal progress report from the city today.
That's right. Crews are still operating 24/7. And I'm at one of the places that snow from the streets is being brought. The dump trucks come in, leave the snow, and then the excavators work to pile it up the mound. The city says it's an operation that's going to take several more days. It's a big job cleaning up 55 centimeters of snow in Toronto.
You know, this storm is now one of the most disruptive the city has seen in the past 20 years.
So much snow still spilling out onto roadways, machinery is removing it, sucking it up and spitting it out into dump trucks. The dump trucks then haul the snow to one of five city storage facilities where loaders pile it up into a giant mound where it will eventually melt. Removal along snow and streetcar routes are being prioritized.
The windrows left by plowing operations can limit the access by emergency vehicles, restrict traffic flow, interfere with both pedestrians and parking, and obstruct sight lines.
People around the city are also still navigating narrow pathways.
It's a little crazy. It's kind of hard to walk because half the footpaths aren't shoveled yet, but I don't know, they've probably got a lot to do.
And there are bus stops still preventing easy access for riders.
No, it's pretty bad actually, because you gotta jump it, and it's pretty dangerous because you can fall.
Many residents are still working on clearing snow around their properties, while the city says crews are making progress out 24/7, including around school safety zones and at transit shelters.
A lot of snow to remove, so it's going to take some time.
The historic storm prompting the city to notify drivers it will tow illegally parked vehicles to make way for equipment. So far, residents appear to be taking preemptive action.
We've only had to tag and tow just a few vehicles. That the communications has in fact been very effective. The community stepped up and helped us out.
The city says when removal crews work in an area, temporary signage is placed so people know not to park there. Snow removal has already been completed on the DVP and the Gardner Expressway. Some other streets that have been tackled include Islington, Dufferin, Bloor. And today, crews were working on Avenue Road as well as Shepherd and Dixon. And the city says crews will start tackling local roads tomorrow. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell. Back to the desk.
All right. Thank you, Beth. And this is a work in progress. Track the latest in the snow clearing efforts on our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. Investigating the actions of one of their own, tonight there are charges against a senior member of the Toronto Police Service.
A superintendent is facing 7 charges under the Police Services Act. A hearing is set for Monday. CTV Sean Leithong joins us now from Toronto Police Headquarters with more. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, it may be a surprise to the public to find out there are 7 charges in this case. They came, the news breaking today, and like you said, those charges will be faced on Monday.
A Toronto police superintendent is facing 7 non-criminal charges for professional misconduct. Superintendent Stacey Clark will appear in front of a police tribunal on Monday. The charges made public today. Toronto police spokesperson Megan Gray said in a statement, "We can confirm that Superintendent Stacey Clark faces 7 charges under the Police Services Act, including breach of confidence, discreditable conduct, and insubordination." This comes 2 weeks after an internal investigation was launched amid allegations of impropriety in a recent promotional process. CTV News asked if today's charges were the result of that investigation. Gray said, "The Police Services Act prevents us from commenting further." Gray also added that it is the intention of Chief of Police James Raymer to bring an external prosecutor and adjudicator. Clark is the second high-ranking Toronto police officer to face charges in the span of a week. Superintendent Riaz Hussein is facing an impaired driving charge after a 2-vehicle crash on the 401 in Pickering last Thursday night. Hussein is currently suspended without pay.
In relation to the case involving Clark, Megan Gray said to us that, in fact, we would know the details of these charges once the hearing begins. That is scheduled for 11 a.m. on Monday. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Michelle, I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Sean. Returning to our pandemic coverage, and federal health officials say there are signs the spread of COVID-19 is slowing nationally. But even though the Omicron wave might be peaking, hospitalizations are still on the rise.
Over the past week, an average of over 10,000 people with COVID-19 were being treated in our hospitals each day, surpassing peak daily numbers for all previous waves of the pandemic. This includes over 1,100 people in intensive care units, which is higher than all but the third wave peak.
This has been one of the deadliest months of the pandemic so far. New deaths climbed above 100 per day this week for the first time in almost a year. Dr. Teresa Tam says that's because the number of people getting sick is likely higher than ever before. And she's reminding Canadians that the virus is still capable of causing serious harm.
Ontario's received its first shipment of the antiviral drug Paxlovid. The health minister made the announcement on Twitter saying the COVID-19 pill is now being distributed. Christine Elliott also says the province has secured an additional 400 courses for First Nations communities in the north. Canada received an initial shipment of 30,000 courses of the Pfizer drug. Another 12,000 are expected through March. Paxlovid is intended to protect against hospitalization and death, but health officials stress it's not a substitute for vaccination.
and looking at the vaccination effort in Ontario and across the province. 88.4% of eligible people aged 5 and older have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. 82.6% are deemed fully vaccinated. And in Ontario, that's still considered two doses. In total, more than 5.8 million people have now received a third shot.
Ottawa says it's doing everything it can to stop people from risking their lives by trying to cross the border illegally. On Wednesday, the bodies of four family members were found in Manitoba near the U.S. border. The victims were located near Emerson, Manitoba. It's believed they died from exposure during a blizzard while trying to walk across the border into North Dakota. U.S. investigators think the deaths are linked to a human smuggling operation. Steve Shand of Florida has been charged and is scheduled to be in court Monday. Canada is loaning Ukraine $120 million amid growing international concern Russia will invade its neighbor.
But the Trudeau government is not saying whether it will provide weapons, something the Ukrainians have repeatedly requested. CTV's Kevin Gallagher reports.
As the Russian force buildup continues, nearly 200 Canadian soldiers are inside Ukraine on a training mission. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau won't say what will happen to them if the Kremlin invades.
Today, we're making a significant announcement of a $120 million loan, which is one of the top things that the Ukrainian government has been asking for from Canada.
What Ukraine has asked for is that Canadian troops remain past a March deadline and that Ottawa provide weapons similar to the anti-tank missiles sent by the United Kingdom. Instead, Trudeau, along with other NATO allies, are promising harsh economic sanctions if Russian troops cross the border.
We know that the Russian people do not want to see Ukraine invaded, do not want to see deaths in a conflict that should be avoided. That's why we're calling on Russia to de-escalate.
An ineffective deterrent, according to Russia's ambassador to Canada.
Sanctions never will be able to work against such countries, such nation as Russia.
Moscow denies it plans to invade Ukraine, despite placing more than 100,000 troops at the border. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in an attempt to cool tensions.
We didn't anticipate there'd be any breakthroughs, but what we were doing is testing whether there is still a path forward for diplomacy, for dialogue.
Russia wants to prevent Ukraine from joining NATO and have Western forces pull out of former Soviet republics in Eastern and Central Europe. Lavrov says America can't strengthen other nations' security at the expense of Russia's.
Russia's foreign minister agrees the diplomatic process should continue, something that could eventually lead to a meeting between President Biden and Putin. Kevin Gallagher, CTV News, Ottawa.
Meanwhile, Canada is committing another $50 million in humanitarian aid to help Haiti.
We stand committed to a more stable, democratic, and prosperous future for the country and its people. From my perspective as Minister of International Development, our focus must be on improving the quality of life for Haitians.
The financial pledge came at the start of an online meeting convened by Canada today to help the Caribbean nation. $15 million of the money will support Haiti's national police force. There's been a spike in violence that is worsening an already severe humanitarian crisis. Gangs have extended their control of territory since the assassination in July of their president.
Countries are ramping up efforts to help Tonga in the wake of last weekend's devastating volcanic eruption. Australia is preparing equipment on a ship that will arrive in Tonga next week with much-needed supplies. The first aid flights from Australia and New Zealand landed yesterday with water, shelters, and communications equipment. A New Zealand Navy vessel carrying water arrived today, 6 days after the eruption and tsunami.
The UK's Royal Mint is celebrating the Queen's Platinum Jubilee with a new 50 pence coin set to enter circulation on February 7th. The coin will feature the number 70 and was personally approved by the monarch. It is part of the larger set celebrating the milestone and the first 50 pence to be part of the Jubilee collection. Her Majesty is the first British monarch to reach 70 years on the throne.
This is Lincoln Alexander Day, an opportunity to remember the considerable contributions of Canada's first black member of parliament. He was also the first black cabinet minister and lieutenant governor of Ontario. Alexander was a passionate advocate for equality, advancement of education, and youth issues. In a city filled with high-rises, we're learning about an effort to bring classrooms into condos.
It's a move that could give at-home learning another meaning. CTV's John Woodward reports on the plan to put a school inside a residential tower.
When Market Lane Junior and Senior Public School lets out each day, parents marvel at one thing.
You can tell there's a lot of kids in this neighborhood, and we're going to keep growing, and we need space.
A condo construction boom has brought families with it and led to major pressure on downtown schools like this, which share space with parks to make everything work. A school project announced today could take that to the next level, literally putting the Lower Yonge Precinct Elementary School inside a condo being built on old provincial government lands.
And it really is a unique project that really puts a school where people live. It's learning where you live, even in a downtown high-density area.
Right now, this is a liquor store parking lot, but in a few years, the condo built here will have in it a school with room for 445 students.
We already have schools in the city of Toronto that need relief today. There is growth taking place in condo development, vertical communities being built right across waterfront and in urban cores. It is for those families that we believe this $44 million investment will give them relief.
And as this year's election looms, the PC party clearly thinks this is a popular move. The new school was the subject of a slick video featuring the minister and city officials too.
A great opportunity for the Toronto District School Board to continue to lead with this innovative urban model that can be replicated across the province and across Canada even.
It's actually Toronto that's replicating an idea implemented 5 years ago in Vancouver, and Toronto already has a school built into co-op housing. Urban planner Brent Tadarian says no matter how many there are, urban places need more.
The cities that are getting kids downtown and keeping kids downtown are the ones that designed for kids. It's not that complicated, actually.
Parents pleased.
Architecture is definitely what I'm not used to growing up, but I think it's great. I love it.
If all goes to plan, the school could see its first classes in 2024. John Woodward, CTV News.
Coming up, that distinctive voice, those powerful songs, remembering the singer and actor with an unforgettable name.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, many people like to bet on sports. A Burlington man thought he won more than $1,400 when he picked the outcomes of three hockey games. But he found out when it comes to tie games, a tie is not always a tie. I'll explain the details just ahead.
An extreme cold alert continues for the city of Toronto overnight tonight. We're looking at a low of minus 14, feeling like minus 20 with the wind chill. Winds are relatively light, and if you live close to the shores of Lake Ontario, especially in the West End, could see a couple of centimeters of snow as we get into the evening. I'll explain more. And looking ahead, it's going to be very cold through the 7-day forecast. I'll tell you more about that coming up. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Sports betting is a billion-dollar business, and recently the rules were changed to allow single-game sports betting in Canada.
In Ontario, that's only allowed online. Now, if you play at your local convenience store, you still need to pick three correct outcomes. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, a Burlington man was happy when 2 weeks ago he bet three hockey games would end in a tie. When they did, he thought he won more than $1,400. Then he found out a tie is only considered a tie if the game goes to a shootout.
Oh, I felt great. I was excited.
Mark Nadell of Burlington considers himself a casual bettor, wagering small amounts on long shots. He bet on three NHL hockey games on January the 8th and predicted that all three would end in a tie. He bet $2 to win $1,458 and thought he was a winner when at the end of the third period, all three games were tied.
I guess everyone's probably looking for the elusive three-game tie, right? Which is statistically is pretty hard to get. I hit that. I was obviously very excited.
But when Nadell went to collect his money, he was told he was not a winner. One of the games went to a shootout, but the other two ended in overtime. He was shocked when OLG told him a tie is not a tie until the five-minute overtime period is done and the shootout begins.
That's not really consistent with what a tie is, really, to the rest of the world.
Nadal says the NHL considers a game a tie after regulation time, and OLG should too.
Each participating team is awarded 1 point at the end of regulation time, the tie, right? And the 5 minutes, the additional 5 minutes is, quote, the tiebreaker.
CTV News reached out to OLG, and a spokesperson said the rules and regulations regarding ties for all sports are clearly stated on its website. OLG said for pro-line hockey, a tie result includes the overtime period. If a game is settled prior to the shootout, no tie result is recorded. Nadal feels that is unfair and says OLG should treat tie games the same way the NHL does.
To be honest with you, I don't think I'd be picking ties if I had originally known this.
And the rules for ties are also different for sports such as football and soccer. OLG says sports betting is extremely popular, but added the rules can be complex and advises customers to do their homework before placing a bet. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
More than 333,000 pacifiers have been voluntarily recalled. The silicone pacifiers are available on Amazon. They're made by Frigg in Denmark and distributed in the U.S. by Mushy & Co. There have been reports the nipple can detach and cause a choking hazard. The recalled pacifiers come in two types, the classic version and a version called Daisy. No injuries have been reported.
All right, back to the forecast. This feels like that cold stretch of each year around this time where, you know, sub-zero temps pretty much every day. Those are your highs.
It is to be expected, but I feel as though it would be nice to get a little relief here. When you look at the 7 day, you start to go, oh, goodness, no. And I was talking to a mechanic today. So many people having trouble starting their cars. You definitely want to warm them up, too, to not do any damage in this cold.
That's great advice. And we do remain under an extreme cold alert in the city of Toronto because wind chills will once again get near the minus 20 mark. Temperatures overnight near the minus 15 mark, and that's the criteria. And that makes things difficult out there. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So there is a little relief in the 7 day forecast, specifically for the weekend where we're not as bitterly cold, but that's not the case as we get overnight into early into the morning. Right now we're sitting at minus 11, feeling like minus 14 in Toronto. That's at Pearson Airport, downtown, very similar. The warmest we got all day today was minus 10, feeling like minus 12 for perspective, minus 2 at this time of the year. So what we're looking at overnight tonight is minus 14, feeling like minus 20 with the wind chill. As we head off further to the east and to the north, that's where we're looking at extreme cold warnings still being in place. So if you're in Peterborough and the Kawarthas, extending over towards Prince Edward County, the Kingston area, Northern York and Durham region, also very cold. But as we get towards Ottawa, wind chill values getting close to the minus 40 mark early in the morning. We've just had these warning watches added for tomorrow for snow squall watches in effect. That's for Sauble Beach, Owen Sound, because those are going to be an issue. And I'll show you those on your forecast radar. As we get into tomorrow, we're looking at highs around minus 4 in the city of Toronto, feeling like minus 12. Winds will be gusty due to a system moving in. They're going to be out of the southwest at times 30 to 60 kilometers an hour. Interesting thing set up off of Lake Ontario as we got into the afternoon. This squall line heading in towards the Hamilton area. It's not been a lot of snow, but it's affected visibility on the road, and it's sort of starting to drift to the north a little bit. So if you're in Oakville, Burlington, Mississauga, extending into the Toronto area, you could see a couple centimeters of snow and poor visibility on the roads if you're close to the lake. So bear that in mind. What we're looking at in terms of we've had high pressure in place, next system moving in, warms us up a little bit, gives us some gustier winds and a quick burst of flurries as we get into tomorrow night. So forecast radar in motion here. You can see that bit of squall line here close to the shores of Lake Ontario, so expect that possibility. As we get into tomorrow, there's your flurries moving in from the system. Winds swing around out of the northwest, and that's when we start to see some squalls visible off of the upper Great Lakes. So that is a concern. Minus 4 tomorrow after minus 14 tonight, then minus 6 Saturday night, not too bad. Minus 7 for Sunday with some flurries, periods of snow for Monday, 1 to 3 centimeters, and then very cold again at the end of next week. Back to you, Nathan.
All right, thank you, Michelle. Just ahead, the entertainment world mourning two major losses tonight. How fans are paying tribute to comedian Louis Anderson and singer Meat Loaf. His distinctive voice defined rock ballads, his music spanning generations.
Tonight, fans are mourning the loss of Meat Loaf, who has died at the age of 74. Zarada Allman joins us in the studio tonight with a look back at his life and all the tributes pouring in, Zarada.
Yeah, Michelle and Nathan, his career spanning six decades, Meat Loaf sold more than 100 million albums worldwide. His unique style and dark theatrical flair making him one of the most recognizable rock stars of all time. Baby, we can talk all night. Larger than life, legendary, one of the greatest rock singers of all time. The tributes are pouring in for rock superstar Meat Loaf, his official Facebook page confirming his death. His family writing, "We truly appreciate all of the love and support as we move through this time of grief." Marvin Lee Adday was born in Dallas in 1947. His breakthrough album, Bat Out of Hell, released in 1977, has sold more than 40 million copies. His legions of fans drawn in by over-the-top theatrical anthems like Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Music publicist Eric Alper says there will never be another like him.
So somebody like him isn't really supposed to exist in music. He didn't look the part like Mick Jagger. He certainly didn't sing like a Tony Bennett. But here he is with seemingly every single car in North America in the 1970s had an ashtray and then a copy of an 8-track or cassette of Bat Out of Hell.
Over the years, his life and career marred by health challenges. His comeback album, Bat Out of Hell 2, released in 1993, sold more than 15 million copies and earned him a Grammy for the single I Do Anything for Love. In 2017, Bat Out of Hell the musical premiered in England. Mirvish Productions brought it to Toronto the following year. In his six decades in the music business, seeing some of the biggest lows and highs of rock stardom, Meat Loaf has said he has no regrets.
The fact that they have bought tickets, come to shows, and the majority of them have loved what I've done, that's been the best present that you could ever get.
The official statement says Meat Loaf died surrounded by his wife, Deborah, his two daughters, and close friends. He was 74. And no cause of death has been given for Meat Loaf's death. The media reports that he died of COVID-19 have not been confirmed. I'm Zarada Allman. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Zarada. And fans are also paying tribute tonight to Louis Anderson. The comedian and actor has passed away at the age of 68.
Somebody's always telling us that. You ever notice that? Now grow up! It's nowhere to add.
Anderson died of complications from cancer in Las Vegas today. His career spanned four decades. He toured regularly as a stand-up comedian, but he was also a familiar face on TV, appearing in comedy specials and hosting Family Feud. Anderson won an Emmy in 2016 for Best Supporting Actor for his role on the series Baskets. He received three consecutive Emmy nods for his performance.
Adele is postponing a series of concerts in Las Vegas. The singer was emotional as she announced the news on Instagram.
Delivery delays and COVID. Half my crew, half my team are down with COVID. They still are. And it's been impossible to finish the show. And I can't give you what I have right now. And I'm gutted. I'm gutted and I'm sorry it's so last minute. We've been awake for over 30 hours now trying to figure it out. And we've run out of time.
The British superstar was set to start a three-month residence at Caesar's Palace. The shows will be rescheduled.
New details have been released about the upcoming Super Bowl halftime show. A trailer has been released and it includes a group of hip-hop superstars. Titled The Call, it features Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, and Kendrick Lamar. It goes on to depict each artist receiving the call to be part of the big show. The Super Bowl is set for February 13th in California.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
We really feel bad for what's happened, and the mom, I can't imagine what she's going through right now.
Updating our top stories, three siblings are being remembered. They died yesterday in a Brampton townhouse fire, and the community is rallying around the family of Alex Bagan-Overholt and his brothers Riley and Cohen. There's no indication yet just what caused the fire.
He was a nice kid, you know, like, he was always happy, always telling people good things, always just making everybody feel good, you know?
A suspect's been arrested in the death of 15-year-old Jordan Carter. He was fatally shot in an East York parking garage Wednesday night. A 13-year-old boy faces a charge of second-degree murder.
There's a lot of kids in this neighborhood, and we're going to keep growing, and we need space.
A new project was announced today that will see the Lower Yonge Precinct Elementary School put inside a condo being built on old provincial government lands. The plan is to have a school right inside the building with room for 445 students. Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you ever have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
On the Canadian markets, the Canadian dollar is down 42 cents to 79.49 U.S. American benchmark oil also dipped 41 cents a barrel to 85.14. And the TSX Composite Index went down 436 points to 20,621.
We have more tonight on a 13-year-old boy charged with murder.
He's accused in the shooting death of another teen, a 15-year-old boy. And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Jamie Goodfreund and Beatrice Vaisman. Beatrice, you'll be taking a closer look at the gun violence in the city.
Certainly, Nathan. This is a story Scott Lightfoot brought to our viewers. Really, the feeling of grief in the community from people who knew and loved 15-year-old Jordan Carter, who lost his life to gun violence. Police say the perpetrator allegedly is a 13-year-old boy. So these are now two families who are just simply devastated. But at the grassroots level, are we doing enough to stop these bullets from flying? And are we doing enough to help support families, communities, and often the silent victims of gun violence as well? We'll ask youth advocate Spider Jones that question, along with MPP Mitzi Hunter, who's calling for gun violence to be called a public health crisis. That's coming up on CP24 tonight.
And Jamie, you'll also be looking back at the life and legacy of rock and roll legend Meat Loaf.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a larger-than-life figure in the genre of rock and roll. We are going to be talking about not only the life and legacy, but we're going to be getting some stories from individuals who had a chance to hang out with him. We're also going to be speaking with one of the stars of the Bat Out of Hell musical that was in Toronto. We're going to be speaking with Daniela Steers live from London, England. That's all coming up on CP24 tonight. Back to you.
We look forward to it, Jamie and Beatrice. Thank you. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
Richmond Hill's Denis Shapovalov is through to the fourth round at the Australian Open.
Oh, wonderful from Shapovalov.
Shapovalov defeated American Riley Opelka at the Grand Slam event last night. The 22-year-old took the match in four sets. He'll face Germany's Alexander Zverev tomorrow. And 21-year-old Montreal native Felix Auger-Aliassime is also looking to move into the round of 16. He faces Daniel Evans in his match tonight. And you can either stay up very late or get up very early. It won't start before 1 a.m. our time.
Tonight, getting the truth out from inside Afghanistan. Journalists under attack, from beatings to home confinement. The vicious crackdown on crucial voices. We'll have that story and much more later on CTV National News. Join us.
Toronto is one of the most vibrant, diverse, and interesting cities on the planet. We are a world leader in many areas, such as business, finance, technology, entertainment, and culture. Each week, Things to Know TO shines a spotlight on a wide variety of local businesses, services, events, and initiatives from across the GTA that are working to make our city even greater and one of the world's best places to live, work, and play. Join us Saturday mornings for Things to Know TO.
I'm Zaraid Allman. Coming up, the family of three young brothers killed in a house fire share their grief. The community now rallying in support. Plus, a 13-year-old boy charged in the shooting death of another teen. The latest on the investigation tonight at 11:30.
Coming up on CP24 tonight.
growing gun violence concerns. A 13-year-old boy arrested after another teen is fatally shot. Why advocates are demanding change. And showing Scarborough some love. How a new campaign is hoping to close the healthcare gap. A closer look at today's top stories tonight at 7 on CP24.
A Canadian jazz legend is being recognized in a very special way.
Canada Post introduced a commemorative stamp in honor of Eleanor Collins today. The stamp was unveiled during a virtual ceremony. The Edmonton-born musician began performing in the 1930s on television and radio shows across the country. She's worked with everyone from Dizzy Gillespie to Oscar Peterson. And today, the 102-year-old Collins said she is thrilled to receive this special honor.
The honor's there. The excitement even is there. But to really have someone affirm your work and life on a postage stamp? Ooh, that is something. There's only one word for that, and that is surreal.
In 1954, Collins became part of the first interracial cast on Canadian television. A year later, she starred in The Eleanor Show. That made her the first woman and first black artist to headline their own national television series. Michelle.
An extreme cold alert still in effect for the city of Toronto. And if you live near the lake, especially in the west end of the city, this lake effect squall might give us a little bit of accumulating snow, maybe up to 2 centimeters. Elsewhere through the overnight, we're looking at mostly clear skies. Right now, we're at minus 11, feeling like minus 14. Overnight tonight, a low of minus 14, feeling like minus 20. So very, very cold again through the overnight. It's going to feel like minus 20 when you wake up, then up to minus 4 tomorrow with some flurries in the afternoon and evening. Wind chill make it feel like minus 12, a little bit better at the beginning of the week. Very cold again at the end of next week, Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News 11:30.
In the meantime, you can stay up to date by going to our website and watch breaking news all day long on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a good night.